Let's open our Bibles to Joshua chapter number 5. We just watched the miraculous crossing of the Jordan River that happened on the 10th day of the first Jewish month of the 41st year of the Exodus. The Israelis are now in the Promised Land, and they arrived just in time to select their Passover lambs for the very first observance of Passover and the Feast of Unleavened Bread inside the Promised Land itself. This is a very big deal for them. Now, the miraculous crossing has put the fear of God and of the Israelis even more into the Canaanites. They are already just beside themselves, having personally heard and maybe even seen the Israelis take out the Amorites on the east side of the Jordan, the armies of Sihon and Og. They've also been watching those within line of sight, the cloud of God's presence over there for many, many months across the Jordan. But now, with the crossing of the Red Sea, that cloud has led these Israelis across dry ground where there was a flooded river, and brought them to within just over a mile from the walled city of Jericho. And so that has been the main topic of conversation all over Canaan. Chapter 5. As soon as all the kings of the Amorites who were beyond the Jordan to the west, and all the kings of the Canaanites who were by the sea, and I think the sea here is probably a reference to the Mediterranean, heard that he who is had dried up the waters of the Jordan for the people of Israel until they had crossed over, their hearts melted, and there was no longer any spirit in them because of the people of Israel. Now, Rahab had already described that had happened before the crossing. So apparently, this is just really increasing this hopelessness in the hearts of the Canaanites, generally speaking. We'll leave the Canaanites for a moment and focus upon some repentance and correction that needs to take place amongst the Israelis. Verse 2 says, at that time, so meaning the 10th day of the first month, the day when the Passover lambs are selected, he who is said to Joshua, make flint knives and circumcise the sons of Israel a second time. What's this about? Well, it goes on and explains. So Joshua made flint knives. Why flint? More than likely, it was just much more readily available. They don't have blacksmiths that are taking care of making metal at this time in their encampment. So flint knives work perfectly well. So make flint knives, circumcise the sons of Israel a second time. So Joshua made these flint knives. He circumcised the sons of Israel at Gibeat Ha'arlot, which has to do with a hill. We'll get to that in a moment. This is the reason why Joshua circumcised them. All the males of the people who came out of Egypt, all the men of war, had died in the wilderness on the way after they'd come out of Egypt. And though all the people who came out had been circumcised, Yet all the people who were born on the way in the wilderness after they'd come out of Egypt had not been circumcised. For the people of Israel walked 40 years in the wilderness until all the nation, the men of war who came out of Egypt, perished because they did not obey the voice of He who is. And He who is swore to them that they would not, He would not let them see the land that He who is had sworn to their fathers to give to us, a land flowing with milk and honey. So it was their children whom He raised up in their place that Joshua circumcised, for they were uncircumcised because they had not been circumcised on the way. So the explanation is basically this. That generation that rebelled, that got the penalty placed upon them, for the most part, carried that attitude of God's not the boss of me, right into the way they dealt with newborn baby boys. God can't make me circumcise my kid. And so not everybody probably followed this pattern of rebellion, but a large enough contingent that it necessitated what we're reading about here. It would seem as if God basically adopted the procedure of, fine, be that way, with the actions of that rebellious generation, and just let them not circumcise their baby boys if that's what they wanted to do. But now that they're in the promised land, it's a fresh start. It's a new place and a new time, and the covenant needs to be adhered to. And so they are going to have a mass circumcision ceremony for all of the men that have not been circumcised for the past 40 years. And that is going to take place, as I said, probably on the 10th day. Maybe they would do it on the 11th. But the idea is that they would be finished and mostly healed by the time Passover rolls around on the 14th. And so this is how it describes it. It says, verse number 8, when the circumcising of the whole nation was finished, they remained in their places in the camp until they were healed. When we had a story about this before, it revolved around the Shechemites agreeing to the demands of Dinah's brothers that she couldn't get married to an uncircumcised man. And if they really wanted this wedding, then the Shechemites, all of them, needed to get circumcised. And then the boys, they were young men, they were in their 20s, waited until the third day after the circumcision and then attacked them. So third day, they were still in pain. So here we are. I think the circumcision in the story in Joshua took place on the 10th day, and Passover is going to be happening on the afternoon of the 14th, getting ready to become the 15th. So a good 4 days of recovery between the key events in our story here. But He who is said to Joshua on the day of the circumcision, today I have rolled away the reproach of Egypt from you. The reproach of Egypt here is a synonym for uncircumcision. That while they were in Egypt, they had not practiced the circumcision of Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, and then the 12 boys. When they went on their exodus, apparently there was a mass circumcision. But then the rebellion happened, and they quit practicing it again. So this is the last bit of Egypt. Get out of them. That's what God is saying. So he's rolled it away. And so that's the name of the place. It's called Gilgal, which has the idea of rolled away, roll. And that's how the encampment, the very first encampment of Israel in the Promised Land, just a mile or so to the east of the Jordan River, gets its name. Now, the name of the actual circumcision area is the one about the pile of foreskins. That's the Gibeat Ha'arlot, because they apparently piled up all the little bits of foreskin in one little pile as the men came filing by. That site, a sub-site for Gilgal, got its name that way. Just some of those strange things that you see as naming in the story of the Bible. Now, back to verse 10. While the people of Israel were encamped at Gilgal, they kept the Passover on the 14th day of the month in the evening on the plains of Jericho. Now, the 14th in this particular year, which I think is 1416, it happened on a Sabbath day. So in the afternoon, late afternoon of that day, that's when they butchered and began cooking their Passover lambs. When the sun went down, that becomes the 15th, and that's the very first day of the Feast of Unleavened Bread. Verse 11, the day after the Passover, on that very day, they ate of the produce of the land, unleavened cakes and parched grain. So they have their Passover meal as the sun goes down from the 14th to the 15th. That would be on a Saturday night. And then the next day, when the sun comes up, that's the daylight hours of the first day of the week. Now, it's not a normal work day because it's the first day of unleavened bread. It's supposed to be a day off. But they do have permission to go out and harvest the very first cutting of a sheaf of barley from the fields that had been planted by the Canaanites the previous fall. This becomes the very first feast of first fruits. And they wave this at the tabernacle in a special ceremony, and this marks the beginning of the harvest season for barley. Now, they'll take this day off for just celebration and worship and relaxation. But the next day is going to be the first day of the harvest, the first working day of the harvest. And guess what happens? Verse 12. The manna ceased the day after they ate of the produce of the land. So that means that the day after they cut that very first sheaf of barley for the first fruits ceremony, that day was the last day they saw manna on the ground when they woke up. The next day, if they want to eat, make bread, they have to cut the grain of that had been planted by the Canaanites and process it. So we've now begun the Israeli agricultural cycle within the Promised Land. They are working the land. And so we are told that there was no longer manna for the people of Israel, but they ate of the fruit of the land of Canaan that year. And so this is when the sabbatical cycle starts. when they plant their grain crops in the fall of this year, that will be the beginning of year two, because they were harvesting the crops planted by Canaanites in year one. And so this is where we can kind of start the timing of the sabbatical cycle. They would have continued with their Feast of Unleavened Bread up through the 21st of this month. The 21st would have finished on a Sabbath day as well, and 29th of April. So once they're done with their festival, now they're going to start thinking about going into battle mode. Chapter number 5 finishes with this little story. When Joshua was by Jericho, now remember, Gilgal, according to Jewish tradition, is set up a little over a mile from the eastern wall of Jericho. So Joshua is out there between the encampment and Jericho, just kind of watching, looking at the city, thinking about how he's going to take this place. That's his military mindset. So when Joshua was by Jericho, he lifted up his eyes and he looked, and behold, a man was standing before him with his drawn sword in his hand. So he looks up and he sees some guy with a sword in his hand. And immediately, Joshua goes into identification mode. Joshua said to him, "Are you for us or are for adversaries?" So, you know, with a little bit of a military background here, it was the halt who goes there, or friend or foe, or you give the sign for the password and you're expecting a countersign back from the other person, because you need to know, are they on my side or are they on the enemy's side? It's interesting, though, how the entity responds. He said, "No, I'm the commander of the army of he who is. I've come here." And so Joshua fell on his face to the earth and worshiped, paid homage, and said to him, "What does my Lord say to his servant?" So the entity identifies himself as a commander of the Lord's army. Now, I think we're talking about an angel. In fact, I think we're talking about the angel Michael, who is assigned by God, as we see later in the book of Daniel, to the Israeli people to be their guardian angel. And that's who I think this actually is. But Joshua immediately understands that he is lower on the scale than this entity. Now, some people do believe this is Jesus. I don't think that, but I do acknowledge where I can see why some people want it to be Jesus in a pre-Bethlehem incarnation. But here is what else goes on. The commander of he who is his army said to Joshua, "Take off your sandals from your feet, for the place where you are standing is holy." And Joshua did so. This is another one of the reasons that some of our friends believe that this is Jesus, because of the demand that he take off his sandals, man-made sandals, because this is a special holy place. I think it's possible that an angel might even demand that when they are representing God. But that's neither here nor there, since we don't know for sure. Here, though, is the rest of the story. This entity has come to give Joshua the battle plan. Joshua had probably been trying to make a battle plan at this point. But God's already got something special. Chapter 6. Now Jericho was shut up inside and outside because of the people of Israel. None went out, none came in. So it is a total lockdown, especially now that Israel is like right up on top of them. He who is said to Joshua. Now that's another reason some people think that this entity is God himself or Jesus. But I again remind you that angels always speak in the first person when they are representing God. That was typical of a messenger. Verse number 2 continues. See, I have given Jericho in your hand with its king and mighty man of valor. You shall march around the city, all the men of war going around the city once. Thus you shall do for 6 days. 7 priests shall bear 7 trumpets of ram's horns before the ark. Now, the Israelis have 2 metallic horns, silver horns, that they use for normal communication. But God tells them for this special event, he wants them to use ram's horn trumpets, shofarim. And they are going to be in front of the Ark of the Covenant. Remember, the Ark of the Covenant is God's throne. God is going to lead the battle. 7 priests shall bear 7 trumpets of ram's horns before the ark. They'll be blowing these during the procession. On the 7th day, you shall march around the city 7 times, and the priests shall blow the trumpets. And when they make a long blast with the ram's horn, when you hear the sound of the trumpet, then all the people shall shout with a great shout, and the wall of the city will fall flat. And the people shall go up, everyone straight before him. So the battle plan is this. Apparently starting, I think, the next day after Joshua has this conversation, which I believe is probably happening in connection with the end of the Feast of Tabernacles, or excuse me, the Feast of Unleavened Bread. So I believe that this is probably going to start pretty quickly for a new week. So they are going to go around the city once each of these 6 days. Now, I already told you the city is about 1/4 mile long and about 1/10 of a mile wide. So you know that their march is only going to be a circuit of about 1 mile because they're going to be far enough out of arrow shot and slingshot. You can walk a mile circuit in 20 minutes. We'll make it 30 minutes. So each day is going to be pretty quick. But on the 7th day, they're going to go around 7 times. So that's going to take a few hours, say 3 hours. And then that's when they're going to blow the trumpets. And that's, God says, is when those brick walls are going to collapse. The way that the outer perimeter is going to collapse is those brick walls are going to just drop straight down and fill the ditch, the dry moat that surrounds the city, which is why God says the people, that is, your soldiers, are going to be able to walk right straight up into the city. They're just going to be able to walk over the rubble of the collapsed walls right straight into the city. Now, guess what, folks? When archaeologists went and dug up Jericho, they found out that those brick walls had collapsed down into that dry moat and allowed entrance into the city. Except for one little section on the north side where the wall didn't collapse and fill up the ditch. That's why I suspect that it was in that north end where the wall section that Rahab's house was located in. that's where that was at, because that ditch wasn't filled with rubble. So I think it's just more evidence of the veracity of Scripture as to how the city of Jericho was taken. But back into the story, this is just the preliminary stuff, getting ready for it. So Joshua, the son of Nun, called the priests and said to them, "Take up the Ark of the Covenant, let seven priests bear seven trumpets of ram's horns before the Ark of He Who Is." And he said to the people, go forward, march around the city, let the armed men pass on before the Ark of He Who Is. And just as Joshua had commanded the people, the seven priests bearing the seven trumpets of ram's horn before He Who Is went forward, blowing the trumpets. So they're just playing a song with the Ark of the Covenant of He Who Had following them. The armed men were walking before the priests who were blowing the trumpets. That's probably the 2.5 tribes that are the vanguard. They're probably in the front. And then the rear guard, the rest of the armed men, they're following behind the ark while the trumpet blew continually. Joshua commanded the people, "You shall not shout or make your voice heard, neither shall any word go out of your mouth until the day I tell you to shout, and then you will shout." So he caused the ark of He Who Is to circle the city, going about it once, and they came into the city, the camp, and spent the night in the camp. So a very eerie, strange thing for the Canaanites to see. They think they're about to be attacked, but instead, the armed men go around the city once and go back to their camp, and the only noise is the sound of those trumpets. That's it. And then it's over with. And then we'll see that it'll get repeated exactly like that for another 7 days, or another 5 days. And then the seventh day is going to be completely different. But we'll have to save that for later. So mark your place for another time when we get into the Word.